Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus. The word temenos means sacred space in Greek. It denotes a place that is more than a mere physical location, an area of interest that is special and set apart. Our Olympian temenos is dedicated to discovering and interacting with the many phenomenal manifestations of living mythology and its local parallels in our surrounding culture. Our ongoing mission is to explore, honor, and celebrate the mythical world around us with a special focus on non-traditional subcultures and practices, folklore entities, fabulous beasts, haunted places, celestial chariot sightings, otherworld encounters, and even the simulated worlds of mythic gaming. Before we begin tonight's show, I am going to share a quick review with you. Mythos is an awesome Greek mythology role-playing game, and the Epic Game Mastering Guide allows you to easily enter the setting and to begin running adventures. First, we start with the geography and cultures of Hellas, which include a close look at 7 important Greek city-states. In antiquity, it mattered where you came from, so your choice of polis will definitely influence your personal destiny in Mythos. An introduction to the 5 mythic royal houses follows. Of course, I favor the House of Hercules. Then there are landmarks, important sites, or where adventures can begin or most likely occur. I was pleased to see the Argonaut Expedition, Oracle of Delphi, and the locations of some of the labors included in this chapter. Epic Deeds provides you with guidance on setting an epic mood, determining what happens between adventures, and using omens. It also explains the setting and context of Mythos as a game. The Oracle provides you with ways to integrate divination, plus the whimsy and will of the gods, into your campaigns. It also issues an invitation to get your feet wet adventuring in the Egyptian menace. Epic Tales contains 4 novice adventures, 4 seasoned adventures, and 4 veteran adventures, enough to keep you busy for quite a while. Epic Fiends contains stats and descriptions of the monsters and humans you are likely to encounter on your wanderings through Greek mythology. The Epic Game Mastering Guide ends with Destiny's Child, an introductory adventure that brings you to Mycenae and within the political sphere of the House of Atreus. Onwards. And let me add that the game's designer and writer, Gilbert Garrow, just celebrated his birthday. So happy birthday, Gilbert. And now on to Mythic Gaming with Tim Espy and Zach McAtee. Greetings and welcome, gentlemen. How are you?
Greetings. Well, I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Doing great. Given the pandemic and the world we're living in, I'd say I'm doing quite well. So what
is
new?
Good to hear.
Thank you. What is new and exciting in the world of Mythic Gaming, Tim Espy?
For me, I've just been playing some Magic here and there, playing some video games still a little bit, but not too much. We've just been super busy at the store, so most of my time has been there. So you know, it's a good problem to have.
Yes, it is. That's an excellent problem to have. And I see what you meant when you said that how often the releases come out. There's no Theros to be found anywhere that I could see.
Yeah.
Everybody has Magic cards, like the Walmart and the Target and some of the other places where we shop. They have the Magic cards near the cash registers. And I'm really not interested in Magic, but I was interested in Theros, and there's nothing anywhere.
Yeah, yep. Now that it's probably year and a half old now already.
Wow.
So they're, not that they phase it out, but, you know, their new product comes and kind of pushes it off to the side.
It seems that they're always, like, mutating the game, too, because I looked at some of the boxes. And the whole feel of what you're, the whole feel and the goal of what you're doing seems to be altered as well. So it's not the same game that's being played. It seems like it kind of mutates and becomes different and expands or refocuses.
Yeah, yep. Every set they try to add different or new mechanics or ones that they haven't used in a while. So they're always changing stuff and adding new product lines and removing some things. But, yeah, the game is always shifting and changing dynamics and stuff to keep it fresh.
And they tried an experiment with Theros and Another World with Dungeons and Dragons because, you know, again, why not? That makes a lot of sense, and I'm surprised it took them so long to do it. Are they continuing that with merging Magic with Dungeons and Dragons, or was that just an experiment that is no longer going on?
I haven't heard of them doing other ones. I would be surprised if they didn't do something with the new Kaldheim set that came out, the like Norse themed one. If they are, I haven't seen anything about it yet, but I would be surprised if they didn't, because that would just fit so well. You know, just like Theros, they have their own gods and it's a whole new plane for them to explore. So I think it would be a missed opportunity if they didn't.
And are they sticking very closely with like Theros took a lot of liberties with the Greek myth. They did it in a wonderful way, and it was very creative and very artistic while keeping true to the spirit of Greek mythology. Are they doing the same thing for the Norse, or is it more straight-laced Norse mythology?
No, it's the same. You can tell that they, you know, the inspirations for some things, like there's Cosima is the, you know, the goddess of you know, the water area, if you will. There was an old planeswalker from back in the day. His name was Tybalt, and he was like the joker, devil-y kind of guy.
Okay.
And, so there was a new planeswalker, a new creature that came out called Valky, God of Lies. And his thing is, it's a flip card, so you can play it as Valky, as the creature itself, or on the reverse side is Tybalt as like, I forget what his name was, Tybalt, Mischief something. So, you know, it's the, you know, the god of, you know, joking and joker. So they, you know, they, like I said, you could tell that there's inspiration from some, but just like they did with Theros.
I'm looking forward to checking that out in the near future. Like, I unfortunately haven't had a chance to play it, but I picked up the God of War, where he went to the Norse lands.
Yeah. Yeah, I want you to play that game. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on it. That game was super good.
And they're still building out Kratos' world. The comic book series just came out. That fits between, I think, God of War number 2 and number 3, or number 3 in Ascension. I'm not sure where it fits in exactly. And they did a graphic novel series for where he's going through the Norse lands. And I heard somewhere that they were playing with the idea of making a television series based on the God of War series.
Yeah, I heard that as well, but I haven't seen anything about it. It had some big people behind it, too, so I'm sure it's still in the works.
And how about on the board game front? Anything good happening there?
I'm still waiting for my Thing board game that I kickstarted. Zach, we played a couple new games.
Yeah, let's see. I know I finally showed Tim Alien Frontiers, which is the game I mentioned, I think, on the last podcast, which is themed around kind of like old-school sci-fi art.
Mm-hmm.
So that was pretty fun. We finally got to try that with three players. I just got a game in the mail that I ordered last August because I happened to find out about it right after the first printing ran out. It ended up being like insanely popular when it first released. So I pre-ordered the second edition, which just got here, I think, the middle of last week. We've played it once so far, and we really liked it. So it's called A War of Whispers. The idea is that it's set in a Game of Thrones-type medieval fantasy universe. There's five great armies, these families that are vying for power and control of all the lands and all the big cities. You don't play as any of them. This isn't one of those typical war games where you are one of the big armies trying to conquer everything. Instead, you play as one of four factions of spies and confidants who are betting on the outcome of the war. So, in an interesting dynamic, all five of the families have their armies on the board, and they summon to different regions. They're fighting for control, and you're effectively whispering into the ruler's ears for each one and kind of goading them to say, hey, I think maybe you should attack over there, or maybe you should shore up defenses in this area. And the whole point is at the beginning of the game, you get one token for each of the five families, and you shuffle them up and put them face down on your map, ranking them from most loyal to least loyal. At the end of the game, you're going to reveal all of them, and for instance, the family you are most loyal to, you're going to get four times the points equal to the number of cities they control. But the family that you're the least loyal to, you will instead gain times negative 1 points for the number of cities that they control. So it's this interesting game of bluffing and double bluffing, because no one knows exactly who you are betting on to win the game. But over the course of the game, you have the option to switch the positions of them. So, for instance, if I see that I really want the Eagle Clan to not have any cities, but Jamie and Tim must have that really high up. They must be really loyal to that one because they're pushing for them really hard. They're making them fight other countries and take over cities. So it looks like they're going to end up with positive points. I can instead switch the position of two of my loyalties, but then I must turn them face up and can never move them again, which means that now everyone else at the table knows exactly how many points I'm going to get from that family getting cities. So now they can try and spike me. So if they say, oh, okay, Zach doesn't want the Eagles to get cities, so if I can make them have at least one or two cities at the end, that's one or two points that Zach has to minus off his score. And it's this... round and around game where you're just constantly trying to manipulate the board state so that you get the most points. You win by very narrow margins, and usually it doesn't quite matter who you're most loyal to or least loyal to. The most important ones tend to be right there in the middle, where you can edge out that 1 or 2 point difference over everybody else because you bet just slightly different. Jamie and I played, and the game ended with 37 points for me and 36 points for her. It was literally a 1 point difference. We had the exact same family as our most loyal, the exact same family as our least loyal, but then our third and fourth were switched, and she ended up losing 1 point, and that gave me the game. It was very exciting, and I'm very eager to try that one with a full four players.
Do you determine where your loyalties lie, or is that something random?
It's randomly assigned at the beginning of the game. So everyone has the same five tokens, and you shuffle them up and put them face down on your map. You're the only person who can look at them at first. But then from there, you can manipulate them by swapping them and turning them face up.
Okay. Wow, that sounds very intricate and very involved.
I was surprised that the mechanics are actually fairly simple, and the board is laid out very, very helpfully. So I don't have a lot of games like this, but the board is actually shaped in a circle, which right off the bat, it just evokes something in me because usually it's always squares and rectangles, and it's just really cool looking at this like globe-like shape. But what they do is the very edge of the globe around the countries is sort of a clock for how you go through the turns, and it walks you through every single step of every turn. So it's got a tracker for turns 1 through 4 before the game shuts off, and then it says start here, take this action, move to this action, and then it moves to the Bear Clan and move through their actions. And then it moves to the Eagles and move through their actions. And you just keep following that circle over and over again, and you get the hang of it really quick. I would say probably our second turn, we were like really, really sitting there and trying to figure out how we could snipe each other and push each other around.
So, Tim, are you looking forward to getting smitten?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say. I remember when Zach was describing it to me, he was talking about how, you know, it's a not necessarily a high contact game, but, you know, you're not out to specifically spite somebody. So, you know, you can't take it too personally if somebody's out to get you. But I like that dynamic where, you know, you're not necessarily out to get somebody. You don't have to, but the option is there. And, you know, it would probably best suit you, but.
I'm wondering, because both of you share a passion for games. That much is phenomenally clear. And I know we talked about your histories in the past, but I like to focus on the passion for gaming. What was it about gaming that captivated you and kept you as you moved through life? Because it's very clear that both of you love games.
Ooh, that's a good question. Zach, go ahead.
Okay. So I think it started with video games with me because it was one of those activities that my family did together. We didn't do too much together, but we had a Sega Genesis, and we would sit down and we would either play two-player games or take turns playing one-player games. And it was just something that like got everyone involved. Me and my sisters had a decent age gap. We didn't really have a lot in common, a lot of shows or movies and stuff that we liked together, but we would always sit down and play video games. And then as I got older, I got into RPGs through my cousin Harry, who he DM'd the first game D&D that I ever played in and started that terrible addiction. But then afterwards, when I was about 17, I want to say 17 or 18, my aunt and uncle, Nick and Diane, you had Diane on here before, and I've talked about them a bunch, they invited me over to join their group for board games. It was extremely intimidating because I was 17, and the rest of the group were all in their like mid to high 50s. They'd all been playing games together for 20 plus years, so they knew each other very well. They knew their strategies, and here I come in as this fresh-faced person with no idea what I'm doing, but I kept going back. I didn't let it scare me off, and every week I kept going and slowly started getting better and getting more confident and getting my feet under me. And it just grew from there.
And it continues to grow because, again, your passion's very clear as you describe the different games that you're playing with your group or with Jamie. And how about you, Tim?
I found that it's...
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
It's all right. I found it's a good bonding experience for a lot of us, especially if you find the right group who can go in with the mindset, like Tim was saying, where you're not going to take it personally if somebody hits you in a game or somebody else wins, and you're just kind of there to have fun as opposed to like crush other people. I think it's very, very good for getting everybody to kind of bond and get closer as a unit.
Very true. And Tim, how about you?
Yeah, for me, it's similar but different. So it started with video games for me. I grew up, my dad had some video games that were, you know, were quote-unquote his, but eventually became mine. I used them, you know, for entertainment for myself. I didn't have any sibling, or I have an older sister, but our age gap was large. So it's basically like an only child. So it's what I did to keep busy. I would always just come home from school and end up playing video games. And when I was younger, I would use them as a more competitive aspect of it, especially when like online gaming became a thing. But I found as I got older, I don't know, the competitive aspect of it. It's still fun, but I don't know if I take it too seriously, and sometimes I don't enjoy it. But as I got older, I started playing more, you know, story-based games, and I don't know how, probably through maybe Pokemon, my local game store had board games there, and I would always look at them and say, oh my God, I really want to play these, but my friends at the time, they weren't super into it, so I never really played too much stuff other than, you know, like Monopoly with my family or whatever, but my board game playing started in earnest, actually more so when the store became a thing and I met Zach and we started, you know, bonding over that. So, and reiterating what Zach said, you know, with board games, you know, I have a whole new friend group that I'm incredibly close with. And because of that, you know, it's really, you know, helped me get through some things and meet new people, and I never would have thought I'd be, you know, playtesting a game with Zach and Zach's uncle, you know, going to parties like that.
That
hopefully
is awesome.
We can soon when everything is back to normal. But yeah.
A lot of people are intrigued with the idea of playtesting games, and you guys are involved in playtesting games. If somebody wants to start doing that, how would you recommend they go about doing it?
I think I've mentioned before that there's a good subreddit called, I think it's just Game Design, and then there's another Facebook group for similar things for RPG design and board game design, and there are always people there looking for help with playtesting stuff they're working on.
That is good to know. And if you send the links, I'll share them.
Yeah, and I'm sure when conventions become a thing again, there's always companies starting out and playtesting stuff there for public opinion.
Yeah, the big ones are Unpubs, which is for non-large game companies. It's for smaller people who are just starting up, and they're unpublished. So they're going there to test out games that haven't been released yet and trying to get public feel and some opinions on things they should change. So once things open up, Unpubs are good to look for, and I think PAX East has a pretty good amount of indie games for playtesting.
I remember, I don't remember the name of the site, but years ago, I guess I had my TV show and my first set of podcasts in Pennsylvania, there was like an independent gaming site where people used to like put up their like role-playing games. And you can go there. There were like tons and tons and tons of games, more games than you could think about for you to try. And some of them you could purchase in booklet form, and some of them were just on the computer. They were, I guess, the equivalent of PDFs back then, ODT files. That was always fun because they had any setting you could possibly imagine, any level of seriousness you can possibly imagine, and any level of complexity that you could possibly imagine. So it was kind of like you could cherry pick exactly what you wanted and then try the different systems out.
I'm sure there's a website called Board Game Geek that, mm-hmm. you know, they write articles and have, you know, the top lists, and you can search pretty much any board game and it'll have, you know, pictures and descriptions and user reviews and user pictures. I'm sure that in the community tab that there's a whole forum for playtesting and getting playtesters.
And have you guys ever heard, I don't know if we discussed this in a recent podcast, but you guys ever played HeroQuest?
HeroQuest.
It's a board game. The reason I'm asking is I thought that they're trying to fund it again and bring it back. That was an awesome game. I still have some of the original. I still have a complete game and some of the supplements. I used to have all the supplements, but some of them got lost in moves over the years. But it was kind of like a very simple role-playing game. But it was kind of like a cross between a board game and a role-playing game.
And you had a heroic character. It was a dwarf, a barbarian, a wizard, and I don't remember what the other one was. And there was a continuing story that unfolded through books, and you played it like in different chapters. So the main game had like one story, and then each of the expansions had another story. I remember one focused on like the undead, another one focused on like it was like a barbarian type of adventure, and they would come with new characters as well. And then you'd move around the board like a board game, and there were cards, and you know there were actions you could take. But collectively, it was like a role playing game, and you gained an experience between chapters and so forth. But each chapter was kind of like a standalone. So you didn't have to have the same group coming and playing all the time. You could just run a series of chapters, each of which had a beginning and like an end where you won. And then in England, there was Advanced Hero Quest, which it took me a while to get back then, but that was a lot more complicated than Basic Hero Quest.
Yeah, I'm looking at pictures now. And it looks like the figures look super detailed, and it looks like like Betrayal. Some of the Betrayal games looks like it got some inspiration from here.
Yeah, I can see that. I remember I found a HeroQuest box at a garage sale once. And it was only a couple bucks, so I bought it. But then it turned out it was missing the rules and missing a bunch of components. But it was $2, so I couldn't really complain.
No.
I never got the chance to play it, but I've heard it's really fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And it was if you played role-playing games with maps and figures, you could easily expand past the what was in the booklets. And, weave entire campaigns using other boards and other figures, because the main board was basically like a labyrinth type of thing. And it came with doors that could be opened or closed. It was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. I'm trying to think back. I first started getting interested in games, the regular games when I was a kid. And the typical ones like Risk and Monopoly and so forth. But I always wanted to change the rules. I always wanted, to change the focus of the game because I didn't find the focus of the game very interesting. So I was very pleased when I discovered role-playing games at the dawn of the hobby, although those weren't really presented to me in an appealing way. Somebody tried to get me in a game and asked them what it was about, and they said, oh, you'd love it. It's like you use statistics to have fantasy adventures. Right? I think I'll pass on that. Then I discovered one of the Dungeons & Dragons, in the early versions. And I thought that was great. Some of the rules I found confusing, but I couldn't understand about designing the dungeons, because it was basically you design dungeons and then you put random monsters and random treasures in it. So that didn't resonate with me. And it's only when the Thieves World Chaosium put that out, because I was familiar with the books, where I saw how you could take any setting and pretty much create a game world in it. That made me realize the full potential of the game. And when I discovered Tunnels and Trolls very early on, and they had you could play by yourself through the solitaire dungeons. So I just started playing and interweaving all these things, and then I started dungeon mastering. And I think in all the years I've been RPGing or playing these composite type of things, there's only twice that I played as a character. All the other times I've been the dungeon master.
It sounds like Zach.
Yeah. I know the pain.
And people don't realize how much work it takes to put together a scenario, because you do all this research and all this fleshing out, and sometimes all that avails to naught because people don't pick up the hints or take the bait. So you're left with having to recycle that at some other time someplace else.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many pages of notes I've had to just throw out mid-session because nobody either picks up on it or they just go in a different direction.
There was recently something I saw. It was a commercial on YouTube, but it was, I think it was called Alchemy Wizard or Alchemist something, where you can create high-quality maps, you know, like with the press of a button. And they had basically like a grid, and then you could choose rooms and the size of the rooms and what type of room it was. And they would generate the graphics, and then you could change things, you know, in the room. But it all seemed to be just click and, you know, click and then print. Or you could even make it 3D and play it on, I guess, one of those sites like Discord or where you can play games.
Mm-hmm.
So that seems awesome. I'm going to look into that at some point.
Zach, what did you use to make your map for the Pokemon game?
MS Paint.
Oh.
I just drew
okay.
it by hand.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, I have a history with MS Paint because way back we had dial-up, so I couldn't really do too much online. So I spent a lot of time just kind of like goofing off and drawing stuff in MS Paint. I used to do some sprite work here and there, like little pixel stuff. So when I was making the map for the Pokemon game, I looked at the map of Norway, and then I freehand drew something based off of it on graph line paper. I scanned that in, and then like I opened that in one tab and opened up Paint in the other, and then tried to recreate the shape I made as best I could in there. I was going to try and pay someone to make like a really nice version of it, but it turns out that that's quite a bit more expensive than I expected, so that didn't happen.
Wow. How about you, Tim? What do you use for your maps?
I've never DM'd or written a story for DMing stuff, so I've never had to use one. The only stuff that some things just make you remember weird things, but when we were talking about, you know, older video games and stuff growing up, I remember I used to play with Hot Wheels a lot. So
uh-huh.
while I was in school, I would draw, you know, racetracks in my notebook. And then when I went home, I would copy those racetracks with the Hot Wheels tracks that I had.
Oh, cool.
Okay.
So I guess that's the closest thing that I have to making maps. I used to make racetracks for my Hot Wheels cars.
Yeah, that works. You would create a map. You'd then use the tools you had to construct it, and then you'd play out the fantasy of racing on it. So, yeah, that's good experience in my book.
Yeah, it's super fun. And then when they started coming out with the Hot Wheels games for like PlayStation and PlayStation 2 and for PC, you could design your own tracks in the game. So then that was like the next step forward for me. So that was always fun.
One of the things that inspired me the most was, and I probably talked about this before, for the Odyssey 2, there was a game called Quest for the Rings. And it was like cutting edge at the time. You had a board, and then you had like these plastic things and these metal coins, and you'd shuffle the metal coins and put them under the plastic things that had like castles on them and put them on various points in the board. And then with the Odyssey 2, when you picked up the plastic castle and the coin underneath, that would tell you what type of dungeon it was, and you would program it into the Odyssey 2, and then you would take your characters and you would play through the dungeon on the video game screen. Unfortunately,
so the first console that we had was the Odyssey 2. I didn't have that, but I was familiar with it. I always just remember playing basketball and stuff for the Odyssey 2. But, yeah, I'm looking up pictures of it. The box art for especially that era, but Odyssey specifically, the box art is amazing.
Yes. And it was before Atari even, so you can imagine the same time with Darby. So you couldn't tell the difference between your character and anybody else's character. And you could tell it through the monsters, you know, if they were humanoid monsters and you. So it's very confusing to play. And if you, like, stood still for a second and you lost track of what you were doing, it would take a while to figure out who you were, and then you get killed by a monster or by a shifting wall or something. But the idea was, like, way ahead of its time.
There was something I saw someone post online that they were like, oh, Nintendo, you should do something with this. Because they had a system called the Wii U, and the way it worked was there was the console which hooked up to the TV, and you could play that with the remotes, but there was also an extra large remote with a screen in it, and that was kind of the precursor to the Nintendo Switch. But mm-hmm. people were suggesting at the time, they were like, why don't you make some kind of D&D-esque type game where everyone who has the controllers is playing on the TV, and then have someone using the controller with the screen act as the DM and, like, adjust the enemy counts and, you know, place traps and stuff, like, on the board. And I don't think that anybody ever ended up making anything like that, but it was a fantastic idea.
Yeah. That would be such a good idea. Wow.
There were, for the computer, there were things like that. I don't remember the name of the game, but I remember I tried my hand at it, and I created a few games that then people could play on the computer. You know, you could save it, and then and there were, like, really early RPG makers for the first PlayStation, if I'm remembering.
Yeah, RPG Maker,
correctly.
That's what I was just thinking of.
And RPG Maker 2, and those were kind of fun also. But, yeah, I'm surprised that that hasn't come out. That's such a great and useful idea. You know, you get, like, a Dungeon Master guide in a kit, and then you could just basically pick types of dungeons and then populate them and then have people go through them. That sounds awesome.
Maybe one day.
Or maybe we should start a Kickstarter and try to make it happen. And I really enjoyed Artifact, and I apologize for my confusion over it, but no worries. That was a really fun thing to do. How is that coming along now?
Jamie is working on hers, and she'll be sending it along to the next person this weekend.
Awesome. And Tim, are you playing that one too?
No, I'm not. I'm not in that one.
Yeah, that was very, very interesting. It'd be fun to see the entire story when it's all composed.
Zach, that'll be something that you'll be able to read or share most of, I assume.
Yeah, we can share it as it keeps getting written.
Nice.
Yeah, I have the chapter that I wrote, and I have the chapter that came before it. And it was interesting.
Can you give any hints as to what your chapter was?
Sure. Let me see if I can find it here. Okay. Last time, Zach read the first chapter, so I'll read the second chapter. A decade later, their dance feeds me, revitalizes me, as do their many offerings. I now have a name and a purpose. Their rituals and observances, priests and priestesses. I have awoken and my mind is clear. In between their celebratory events and ceremonies, I sleep, reliving my memories and weaving the content of their many songs and stories into my greater legend. Earth's blessing I am, my strength deceptively represented by a delicate flower, a flower that blossoms against all odds in the frozen north. Although an artifact of legend, I am not the original shield, which was destroyed in the Troll Wars, where Berea the Bold single-handedly kept the mountain trolls at bay at Steno Pass until other Hyperborean warriors arrived and the day was won. Hyperborea survived, rejoiced, and remembered. My current vessel is new, as will be the incarnation of my wielder. I await the hero, the one who is expected in times of crisis, the one who returns. Thus far, none of the revelers, nor any of the pretenders who claim to be the one, have resonated with my forger's intent, my people's need, or the many tales that have been told. I rejected them, giving signs my people can understand. The pretenders I cursed for their hubris. I hate the pretenders. And I can't find the third page. So basically what happened is during a ceremony, and there was some event going on now, an old man approaches the shield and calls it a pretender. And then he pulls back his cloak and reveals a fragment of the original shield, the one that was supposedly destroyed. Mm. And it turns out he's the folk hero Berea. And that he has apprentice that he's brought who will, you know, join with the shield and the other weapons. And the shield starts being taken over by the original shield. And then the actual memories start replacing all the fake memories that this magical item keeps getting from the songs and stories that are told. And the needs and the energy and the hopes of the people mix with the true energies, and it synergizes and becomes the true shield. And now the true folk hero of this time has come with the old folk hero from before, so they're ready to, you know, to tackle whatever happens at that particular point.
Wow, that sounds super cool, and I'm curious to see where it's Jamie's turn to see where it goes next, Zach.
Yep, yep.
Nice, okay.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, and it was challenging, too. Like, what would a shield take if a shield could think, you know? And what would a shield do if a shield could do things? And then I finished the draft, which I had sent to you, and then as I was revising it, I got to, you know, weave even more, you know, into it. I went back and edited it, I think, one last time before I sent it out.
It sounds like it's a cool story already.
Yeah, yeah. I love the first chapter, too. That's very primal, very elemental, you know, and it really gives you the sense of the forges of creation and, you know, the birth of something new and exciting and terrible and awesome. So I'm really looking forward to Jamie's style and what that adds to the unfolding tale. Is there anything you could share with us, Zach?
She hasn't shown me anything yet, so I don't actually know. I think it's going to be a surprise for me when she sends it along. She's going to send it to, I think it's Donald is after her, Harry or Donald. I don't remember offhand, but she's going to CC me, and that'll probably be the first time that I read it.
Okay. Awesome. Do you have a next game in mind?
Do you mean for when Artifact is done, or?
Yeah, for when we finish the Artifact adventure. Nicholas Dyack, who's another one of our regulars on the podcast, he's a gamer also. So he picked up in a used bookstore near him this role-playing game called Hellas, which is kind of like ancient Greeks in outer space. So that's like right up. That's right up my alley. So he was thinking of playing with that. Fortunately, I had like two of those books somewhere, and I dug them out. So that's one possibility. But you are really great at finding awesome things to play. So I leave it open to both of you. We'll just throw them in there and see what makes the most sense or what's most appealing and take it from there.
Yeah, I'll keep my eye out and see if I can find anything good.
And I ran on Facebook. I don't know how to design modern computer games, and I don't have the RPG Maker type of things, tools to use. But I remember playing play-by-email games a long time ago.
And play-by-post.
Yeah, and so I created a play-by-post game on Facebook. And back then, I was running, before the pandemic, I was running games for kids in a library as part of literacy programs. And I started doing that, I can't even remember how long ago, it's been like decades. So these stories have, you know, unfolded over time. And these quests were like continuing those adventures. So I wasn't able to do it in the library as much in the beginning. And so I started doing it on Facebook, and the adventure on Facebook took place like between two of the stories in the library. And people on Facebook were playing. So, you know, these were adults, so the games weren't like designed for kids. And the kids didn't have to know or read about them. But it was very interesting, you know, to just unfold the story in a new way and have things happening that I could refer to in both a play-by-post game and in the library game, you know, where events were transpiring. I believe it was Jason and the Argonauts that we were doing again. The first time we did it in Pennsylvania, it ran for 2.5 years, which is about as long as the Argonaut expedition actually lasted. And this
nice.
Time, the pandemic didn't let us do that. So.
Yeah, I mean, for you know, what you can say about social media, you know, good or bad, but the you know, the good aspect of it is to be able to do stuff like that, to be able to, you know, make it easier for people to connect and still be able to, you know, to play, you know, your games, whether it be, you know, by play by post or, you know, through forums or on Discord. It's a good tool to use.
Yeah, yes, it most certainly is. And I'm thinking of putting that in the box too, do something like that, because that was pretty easy to do. You know, I created a map, I tied it to a story, and then, you know, people created characters within Greek mythology, and then it went from there. Unfortunately, Facebook got rid of files for new groups, and the files played an important part because I used to write what was going on for that week there. And it would come, the file would be there so people could refer to it. And then we'd do a summary of how everything concluded and put it like in the beginning of the next file. So this way, if you didn't remember what happened, just like TV shows start with previously and they give you like a short synopsis. Yeah, we had that going too, but now you can't do files. So I'm trying to figure out how I could substitute for files in running a new adventure.
Yeah, I know that one of the groups that one of our D&D groups that was there on Sundays, they got together and started their own Discord group so that they could still play. So their campaign's still going. I think they just finished their first one and we're moving on to the next one. So they're still keeping busy. So hopefully when the store opens up again, you know, that'll be back to normal as well.
Well, I'm glad it's busy now because when it's open and business back to usual, you have all these customers now who, you know, are going to want to come and take advantage of everything you offer at the store.
Yeah, yep, yep. Everybody's been super supportive. Like I said, we've been super, super, super busy. So we're still looking forward to when we can start doing events again and having you know, our regular people hanging out and having fun. You know, everybody still stops by, but you know, it can only be for a few minutes. So
I'm looking forward to doing that role playing game, the one shot too.
Yes, absolutely.
So I'm trying to think. I had something to say and I forgot it. And I looked at the clock too. We're down to our last 10 minutes. So what can we look forward to seeing in the near future in terms of products?
For us at the store, again, there's a new Magic product coming out this Friday called Time Spiral Remastered. Time Spiral was an old set from 10 years ago, maybe, where they kind of shifted some things, like how we were talking about before. That's the whole point. They kind of flip-flopped some mechanics that Colors were known for. So that's coming out Friday, as well as another Pokemon set is coming out on Friday as well. So we'll be busy with that. There was a new D&D book that came out. I'm blanking on the name right now, unfortunately. So we have some copies of that. They started doing a cool thing where they did exclusive arts for local game stores. Just you know, like alternate art covers with some different art on the inside. So we still have some copies of that. But yeah, that's pretty much it. I'm still staying busy, and there's unfortunately no timeline yet for in-store event stuff, but, you know, sooner than later, we're hoping, but.
And Zach, you're continuously playing different games. Is there anything that you can share that's new and exciting?
Yeah, I haven't gotten to try it yet. And I know Tim and I are both very excited too. I recently bought a game called Eclipse Second Phase, Second Dawn for the Galaxy. It's a very big, very heavy and involved space, like civilization exploration game. So it came with these amazingly detailed like components and trays and everything to keep everything in. But the basic gist is you play as one of six different alien species or humans, which are kind of like the baseline and have no special powers. And you start with one home planet and you explore the galaxy either inwards towards the galactic center, where you will try to seize power and enter into the galactic council, or you can explore outwards and try and find ancient relics from these incredibly advanced civilizations. The way I described it to Tim is, for years now, I really wanted a big meaty board game, like one of those games that you sit down and say, this is the only game we're playing today. It's going to take us hours. This is what we're doing. This promises to be that and then some. So I am very eager to try it, and I will keep you updated whenever we get to.
Okay, that sounds incredibly awesome. Talisman was one of those games. At some point in my life, I used to have like a group and we used to play Talisman all the time. And again, just like with everything else I do, I'd mix in role-playing and video games and all sorts of other things with it as well. But Talisman was great as a standalone, and then they introduced alternate endings. Then they started taking squares that are on the board and creating separate boards for them that you could enter through the square on the board. So you could actually go hang out in the city, or you can go into the dungeon and move around in the dungeon. And as it changed companies, they developed more and more boards. And after a while, again, I had no one to play with the game with. So I stopped playing it, but I accumulated a bunch of boards, and there are dozens more. And there used to be a great fan site community, which I don't think is active anymore, where they gave you templates. You can create your own, like, adventure cards and your own boards. So while that was up, I printed out a few boards. Like, there was an expansion board that, like, gave you a whole other level to experiment in. I have that one taped on a poster board, and if my Talisman board fits in the middle. So, again, it was and you could do anything you want, because once you had enough cards, you could determine which cards you're going to use in the game. So if you want, like, a vampire game, for instance, there was a vampire board that you can get through one of the squares, and then they had vampire cards, and you could take out things like goblins and orcs and things that weren't vampire-like, and create totally different experiences. So it was very you never ran out of things to play.
It sounds really awesome.
And before we go, if you can kindly share how people can get in contact with you. Let's start with Zach this time.
You can always drop me an email at mrmunnin@gmail.com or find me on Facebook.
Thank you very much. And Tim?
You can reach us at Level One Games on Facebook and on Instagram. Whenever we get new product and new inventory, we take a picture and post it up on there. You can leave a comment or send us a message if you have any questions, and more than willing to help you out. We're open 7 days a week, so somebody's always there to help you out.
Thank you very much, and be well until our next conversation and beyond, and I look forward to speaking to you soon.
Have a great night.
Thanks
for having
me.
Okay. Take care, and thanks for everybody who joined us from home, whether you're listening live or joining us later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. And we're going to close today with Mighty Elohim.